This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. In about half an hour, we're going to be having the breakfast grill. And today, what is happening then, Noel?
The COVID-19 pandemic shocked the world, causing unemployment, massive poverty. The IMF has even predicted global GDP would shrink by 4.4% this year. So we're revisiting conversations with experts on the breakfast grill on policy responses to resuscitate the economy and support the most vulnerable.
That's going to be happening later on after the 8 o'clock news bulletin. Be sure to stay tuned. But in the meantime, we are looking at what's been happening on the international front. And last weekend, the UK and the EU finally reached a post-Brexit trade deal after months of negotiations. And this was a mammoth agreement running more than 1,200 pages. And yesterday, the British Parliament was recalled from recess and MPs have voted to pass the trade deal by 521 to 73.
However, debates on this 80-page bill only went on for a day, prompting some to label it a farce and a rubber stamp ordeal. According to a recent YouGov poll, voters overwhelmingly wanted MPs to back the deal, even though few regard the agreement as being good. So what exactly is in the deal and what still remains to be resolved?
For more on this, this morning we are speaking with Michael Gasiorek, Professor of Economics at Sussex University. Michael, thank you for speaking with us today. What were your key takeaways from the Brexit trade deal? Did anything surprise you?
I guess I've probably got three key takeaways, I would say. And I think the first one, and it's worth remembering, is that there is actually a deal. We were very close to not having a deal. But remember that most free trade agreements are all about reducing barriers to trade. This one is completely unusual in that this is a free trade agreement about increasing barriers to trade. And it's about minimizing the extent to which we increase those barriers. The second takeaway is that the structure of the deal, if you compare the draft text that the EU put out several months ago and the UK put out, ultimately the draft of this text follows very, very closely the EU draft. What that reflects is that by and large, my takeaway is the EU got more of what it wanted from this deal than the UK did. It is the UK that ended up moving furthest towards the EU position than the other way around. The third takeaway is that this is a thin deal. The focus is very much on trade in goods. There's very little liberalisation of trade in services. And even on trade in goods, there is, for example, no diagonal accumulation of rules of origin. On services, financial services are not included. We always knew that would be the case, but the absence of financial services is notable. And there's no mutual recognition of professional qualifications. And that will matter for UK firms.
Boris Johnson admitted that the deal falls short for financial services access to EU markets. Rishi Sunak said London will continue discussions with Brussels over this. What outcomes can we expect?
What was agreed some time back was that the deal would not explicitly include financial services, that financial services would be dealt with separately. And that depends on the EU's and the UK's decision on something called equivalence. So when the UK was a member of the EU, UK financial services sector firms could operate much more freely in the EU because they had passporting rights. So if you could offer services in the UK, you could offer services elsewhere in the EU. That is no longer the case. In order to be able to offer financial services, the EU has to offer UK firms what's called equivalence. In other words, the EU has to agree that the UK regulations are sufficiently equivalent to the EU regulations to allow UK financial services firms to operate in the EU. At the moment, the EU has not given UK financial services firms those sorts of equivalence decisions. And those equivalence decisions are made with respect to different elements of financial services. There is one area where the EU has given equivalence, and that's to do with derivatives trading. And that's, I think, for an initial period of 18 months. But on a whole range of financial services provisions, at the moment, for the UK to supply financial services in the EU, it has to follow the rules and regulations within each member state separately. So it's become much more complicated for UK financial services firms to sell financial services into the EU. If the EU offers the UK equivalence, and that it's going to review over the next few months, then that will greatly enhance financial service access for the UK to the EU. But we have to wait for the EU's decision on this.
Will UK be able to maintain its preeminent status as a financial centre of Europe or indeed for the world?
I don't think the UK will stop being a major financial centre. I think that it'll become less important over time, but to some extent that will depend on these sorts of equivalence decisions. But I think inevitably the financial centre of gravity will start to move to other cities. And that may depend a little bit. There may become specialised centres in different aspects of financial services. So yes, I think London and the UK will remain an important financial centre, but less so than it has been.
So apart from the financial sector, services overall, which make up 80% of the UK's economic activity, have appeared to be mostly left out of the deal. Will this be one of the key areas that still needs to be negotiated? And what else might there be?
Well, I guess negotiated is probably not quite the right word here. With regard to financial services, what we're now waiting for is for the EU to arrive at its equivalence decisions, but the EU can't do that until it has more information from the UK as to the UK's future sort of plans with regard to regulations and so on. So that's still something that needs resolving as opposed to negotiate. Other than that, there's nothing else that still needs to be negotiated in a sense. The agreement is done. This is where we've got to. There is a review clause so that every 5 years the agreement can be reviewed. And it might be that in 5 years' time, there'll be elements to be renegotiated. It's also true that in 5 or 6 years' time, there'll be annual negotiations over fishing quotas. But essentially, there is no more negotiations to be had here. The agreement is done and dusted.
So, Michael, what changes will we see on January 1st tomorrow, and what will take time to implement?
I guess it depends partly on how one interprets the word implement. The agreement comes into force on the 1st of January and the changes take effect immediately. So there's no additional sort of transition phase really or anything like that. So in terms of goods trade from the 1st of January, firms will have to fill out export and import declarations. There will be border checks. You'll need to prove rules of origin as to whether you get the preferential tariff access. UK firms will need to prove conformity to standards and so on. And that kicks in immediately on the 1st of January. There's no implementation period. It will take time for some firms to adjust to the new trading environment. So the actual rules come into effect immediately. My guess is over the next 2 to 3 months, maybe a little bit longer, there'll be some disruptions of supply chains, queues at borders between the UK and EU and so on, as the adjustment takes place and as firms learn about the new systems and what is actually required. With regard to services, again, changes take place on the 1st of January, and for a whole range of services, there will be reduced access to the EU. So the UK will end up exporting less goods and services to the EU immediately following the 1st of January.
What does the UK gain from breaking away from the EU market, and how long might it take for the UK to recover from this exit?
Gosh, that's a tough question. It does gain some sovereignty. So the UK is in a position to choose to make decisions with regard to, for example, regulations, with regard to tariffs, with regard to signing free trade agreements with other countries in a way that it did not have before. But it gets bits of additional sovereignty at an economic cost. And that leads me to the second part of your question. How long do I think it will take them to recoup the losses from leaving the single market? That is really hard to predict. I think it will take a long time. A lot depends on how we bed down over the next few months on the adjustment to financial services. But I think in the long run, the UK will see reduced investment, both in services and in manufacturing in the UK economy. And that's going to have longer run implications for UK economic growth. So I think the answer is a long time.
Thank you so much for speaking with us this morning, Michael. And that was Michael Gasiorek at Sussex University, giving us a bit of insight into what we can expect for the UK now that they have signed a deal with the EU. And I think that was Michael's first point, right? That there should be some amount of pleasure of the fact that there is a deal at all.
So the 3 points, his first 3 points, were his key takeaways was, hey, we've got a deal, number one. Two, that if you take a look at the two deals, that this one looks more like the EU draft as opposed opposed to the UK drop off the deal. And three, it is a thin deal. It focuses primarily on trade and goods, not much on liberalization and other things. And one of those key things, Noel, I think you were talking about as well, was that financial services, right? Because right now, London is that key financial hub in Europe and also in the world. And a lot of that is going to be over the next... So none of this, I mean, they intentionally didn't... It's not included in this part of the deal, right? So now looking forward, that's going to be important to pay attention to. Equivalence, I think he said it a few times there. Because right with the EU deal before this, UK, London banks had that ability to passport their services. Now that's not so much the case.
Yeah, so the question, how easy will it be for UK banks or any financial institution to sell their services in EU? I think March has been set as the deadline to at least reach some conclusion or to have a reasonable compromise here. But I think legal experts that were interviewed by several news reports say that this time frame is very aggressive and it's very unlikely to yield any results due to numerous technical discussions that need to take place.
So I think we'll have to wait and see how the UK fares once now that it has got this deal and going forward. Michael expects that it will hold on to its position as a financial hub, but perhaps not in the long term. So that's something that we will be watching very closely. But right now we are about to head into some messages. And then up next, we're going to be speaking with Daniel Fernandez of DSF.my for an outlook on the automotive sector in 2021. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.